Hello and welcome to the wonderful world of neuroscience. My name is Eric Klein and I'll be your host for this session. Since we're just starting out, let's start out small. Now, by small, I'm not talking so small like individual atoms, but to be honest, we're not starting off too much bigger. By now, you've probably guessed it. We're going to be discussing neurochemistry and the neurotransmitters that help encode, send, and determine all the information that your brain processes, as well as establish how it may grow in the future. To begin, let's ask the question, what are neurotransmitters? Simply defined, neurotransmitters are the molecules that are released into the synapse, acting as chemical messengers and binding to appropriate receptors to generate change within the systems they are released upon. Neurotransmitters have a wide variety of function and structure, so to help organize them, scientists like to group them in families based on the structure and properties they exhibit. These families are often divided between neurotransmitters that are also amino acids, when it's called amines, that are usually just modified amino acids, peptide neurotransmitters, which are composed of short chains of amino acids, as well as sometimes simple gas molecules like nitric oxide that can also produce effects. While there are many different neurotransmitters that have been found and identified, I'm only going to be discussing a few of my favorites today. The first neurotransmitter that I'm going to be discussing today is called oxytocin. It's possible that you've heard of this one before, possibly in the context of being called the love chemical. While oxytocin does play a role in such activities, it also does so much more. Oxytocin belongs to the peptide family of neurotransmitters. First discovered in 1906 and structurally identified in 1952, this molecule acts both as a hormone influencing chemistry in the body as well as specifically within the brain. Like I've stated before, it's sometimes called the love hormone. This is due to its key roles in social behaviors like pair bonding and maternal behaviors, but also influences other sorts of behaviors related to anxiety, depression, and orgasm. One interesting model organism that has a direct relation to this molecule is the prairie vole. An article that dives deep into this subject is one titled The Ties That Bond, Neurochemistry of Attachment in Voles by Kyle Gabroge and Zhuxin Wang, published 2016. The reason that prairie voles are so interesting is that this species is actually socially monogamous. After mating, prairie voles will pair up and begin to exhibit three key social behaviors. 1. Partner preference between mates. 2. Selective aggression towards conspecific strangers, but not their partner. And 3. Biparental care of offspring. What makes prairie voles even more interesting is that other related species like metavoles are promiscuous rather than sharing the same socially monogamous behaviors. Between the species, different patterns of oxytocin receptors are found within the brain, specifically within the regions of the medial prefrontal cortex, nucleus accumbens, and bed nucleus of the striatum terminalis. It has been found that by injecting oxytocin into these regions, partner preference between voles can be induced, while on the other hand, injecting receptor antagonists instead blocks this response. Similarly, female prairie voles release an increased amount of oxytocin in the nucleus accumbens during mating, and when given either more oxytocin or receptor antagonists, mating-induced partner preference can be either induced without having to mate or prevented even after mating respectively. Once again, these results are specific to prairie voles as experiments repeated with metavoles do not obtain the same outcome. Of course, as I've said before, oxytocin isn't only involved in parental behavior, but also in more general mechanisms as well. Another study titled Central Nervous Region-Specific Oxytocin Receptor Expression, Importance and Regulation of Anxiety and Sex Behavior by Tracy Bale and other researchers, published 2001, looks at oxytocin as it influences anxiety and sex behavior in rats. What these researchers found was that estradiol has an impact on oxytocin receptor binding in the ventral medial nucleus of the hypothalamus, increasing the lordosis response, thereby indicating a pathway that influences sexual behavior. They also found that oxytocin and other dopaminergic systems act together in the central amygdala to reduce anxiety, indicating oxytocin's role in mood and reacting to environmental stress. Overall, oxytocin does a lot within the brain, from sexual response to pair bonding to general mood. Of course, while it does all of this, it is not solely responsible for all of these mechanisms either. In the rats, oxytocin was working in concert with other molecules like estradiol and dopamine to achieve the desired effects, and while I hadn't discussed it at the time, prairie voles also use other neurotransmitters such as arginine vasopressin and dopamine to further enhance and achieve the aspects of monogamy that they're known for. The important factor here is that while it's easy and tempting to find one chemical and label it as the be-all end-all to love or sexual behavior, life didn't make it that easy. As one of my favorite quotes goes, "If the brain were so simple we could understand it, we'd be so simple we couldn't." Now to close out this segment, I'll share with you something interesting in the world of neurochemistry. We've talked about oxytocin and how it can help to bring two together, but in neurochemistry there is another instance where a different set of important two don't come together and the implications it has. The two that I'm talking about in this case is actually a set of neurochemicals called androgens and their respective receptors. Androgens are known as male sexual hormones, although they are also produced in females and can be used to be converted into estrogens. Each set of these sexual hormones have a large impact on the development of the human body. However, this development can start even earlier than you might have previously thought. While large doses of the hormones begin to be produced in puberty, during prenatal development, boys will also produce large amounts of testosterone, amounts not seen again until puberty. During this time, testosterone acts throughout the brain, priming it for future development. This has led to a model of development that has two major periods of growth, organizational and activational. The activational period happens during puberty, when the large influx of chemicals is produced within the body and many changes happen as one transitions into adulthood. But the organizational period actually happens during the prenatal period, having hormones and chemicals begin to organize and build the neural pathways that will later be used and grown upon in life. Of course, all this growth only happens if the hormones are able to act on the proper areas. One curious instance in which this doesn't take place is for those with a genetic disorder called complete androgen insensitivity syndrome. This disorder is X-linked and results in the child not responding to any male hormones. Put another way, even producing testosterone and other hormones, none of them are able to connect the receptors properly, essentially resulting in a scenario as if they didn't have any male hormones from the beginning. The end result for this is female-presenting phenotype for sexual organs, but even more curiously than that, most of the people who have this also view themselves as female. While this could be a result from an upbringing as female, it is hard to say that those environmental factors are fully responsible. The reasons why I bring this up are that, one, it's an interesting genetic mutation that may also become more important as our culture advances further in the way that it has, but also, two, to show that neurochemicals have a deep impact on our lives, from the very beginning to the very end and every moment in between. And while not all of them do the same thing, they all work together to provide the experience that we call life. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next session. This is your host, Eric Klein, signing off.